It took us a long time to find it. It's in the middle of nowhere. But it was surrounded by four guard towers, like a prison camp. The workers were locked in. There were dormitories there. And in fact, they were paid 23 cents an hour. So they were off several thousand percent in their estimate of the wages. And a lot of that goes on because no one's watching. No one's looking. We went into a factory that made Alpine car stereos, the top of the line. I mean, if you check your car stereo, see if it's an Alpine stereo. Made in China. The women were forced to work 10 hours a day, and they sat at microscopes, and they did the soldering of the very fine pieces. And they'd be there. I don't know how they would be able to concentrate for 10 hours like that, looking through these microscopes. I mean, it must have been so exhausting. And above them was an electronic scoreboard informing them what their daily production quota was, how many stereos they should have produced, as opposed to how many stereos they did produce, and they were monitored like that every few minutes. They were paid 35 cents an hour. Top of the line technical job in China, 35 cents an hour. And we'll come back to this. Of course, no right to organize, no independent unions, no independent religious or human rights groups, no independent independent women's groups, zero. Well, talk about Phil Knight's greed a little bit. The guy is worth $5.8 billion, the Nike guy. $5.8 billion. And I sat down one Saturday and I wanted to figure out, what the hell do you do with $5.8 billion? What can you do with it? Well, how much money do these people need? So I called a travel agent and I said, I want to fly around the world first class. And they told me $10,282.50. Then I called the Waldorf Astoria in New York and I said, I want a room and I want three meals a day and don't give me no continental breakfast. I want the real thing. Three meals a day. I could get that for about $500. And then I called a car dealership and I wanted a brand new Lincoln Continental. And I was told I could get one for $36,000. Phil Knight could fly around the world first class every single day. He could stay at the Waldorf Astoria and have three meals every single day. He could buy a brand new Lincoln Continental every single week, and he could do it for the next 1,044 years. And yet they continued to suck the wealth off the backs of young women locked in factories around the world who were stripped of their rights. Same thing with Disney. You know, Disney produces the garments, some of its garments in Haiti. We have a nice little surprise for Disney with one of its sweatshops in Africa, but we'll leave that for later. But Disney makes these garments, made these garments, the 101 Dalmatian and the Pocahontas, made them in Haiti, and where the workers lived in utter misery. And we were asked by the workers to come to their homes. They said to us, we think it would really surprise you. And we said, of course we'll go. We'll do anything that you want us to, because we want to take your struggle back to the people of the United States. And we're in this little hut, and it's like maybe 10 by 12, and there's no windows. It's mud and stone walls with a corrugated roof, scrap metal, and one light bulb hanging down, one bare light bulb. And I'll never forget it. Like, we're crushed into the room, and there's nothing there. I'm standing in the room, and I'm looking around, and I realize there's no refrigerator, there's no fan, there's no toys, there's no clothing, there's no water, there's nothing. There was one kitchen table and two cots. And I said to the woman, well, where do you get your water? She worked for the Disney company making this clothing. She said, well, we have to buy it in buckets down the block, and we need 6 buckets a day at 8 cents a bucket. 48 cents a day. That was more than she came home with after making clothing for Walt Disney. She didn't even have enough money to buy water for her kids. I said, oh, where's the bathroom? She takes me outside, and it's a hole in the ground that the family share. Literally, just that. A hole in the ground. We go back inside, and her children were there, and they were laying on the cots, and they didn't look good. And I said to her, how are they? What are they doing home? And Haiti, of all countries, was forced by, you know, the IMF and that bunch to privatize its primary education. So they have to have money to go to school, and she didn't have money to have them go to school, so the kids are in school 2 weeks, they're out 2 weeks, they're in school a week. Whenever they can afford it, they go back to school. The children were sick. One had dysentery, the other malaria. She had no money for medicines. There was no food. I said to them, what are you going to eat tonight? And she says, nothing. We frequently go to bed hungry. Out of these discussions, the worker said to us, do you think that we could approach the Walt Disney Company for a 58 cent an hour wage? They're making 28 cents an hour. And we felt like saying to them, come on, this is the Disney Company. Don't ask 58 cents. Well, they were very modest, very realistic. They said, no, no, we're a very poor country. If we could get 58 cents an hour, we can put food on the table for our families two or three nights a week. For us, that would be an amazing step forward. May not be much to you, but for us, it would be a great deal. Well, when we approached the Disney company with the workers' request, we were told to get lost, to go to hell. We must be out of our minds. The 28-cent wage is a good wage. In fact, the guy who actually was in charge of producing the clothing, a company called H.H. Cutler, he said, look, they're alive, aren't they? Must be a living wage. So this is the kind of mentality, this is what you're dealing with. So we went back to El Salvador, to Haiti, with the garment, and it was $19.99, 101 Dalmatian garment. We talked to the workers, and we found out what the piece rate was for every single operation. And I forget now. I think it was like 13 steps to assemble it. Went down like at 11 pieces. There were 13 steps to assemble it. The total wages in the Disney garment was 6 cents. 6 cents of wages in a $19.99 garment. In other words, 0.3% of the retail price of the garment. If Disney doubled the wages, it would have no impact on the price of the garment whatsoever. Zero. It'd be 12 cents of wages in a $20 garment. Nothing. Well, that doesn't have much impact on Michael Eisner, who last year paid himself $177 million. Compensation and wages and all the rest. That's $3.4 million a week. $104,000 an hour. So Michael Eisner pays himself $104,000 an hour and pays the workers in Haiti 28 cents. It's slavery, just like what was said earlier. And they tell us that the marketplace is the best allocator of resources. And how dare you talk about a living wage or subsistence wages? You know, when PVH, Phyllis Van Heusen, shut down the only unionized factory in all of Guatemala, which they did last Christmas, right before the Christmas holiday, Phyllis Van Heusen owned a factory in Guatemala. It was the only unionized factory, and it had to be destroyed because the workers were making $1.09 an hour. And they were afraid that would spread around Guatemala. So PVH, they're on the president's task force for human rights and worker rights. PVH shuts the factory down, throws the workers in the street, and then sources the work out to factories that are paying 36 cents to 50 cents an hour where there are miners working and where there's forced overtime. And they get a pat on the back from the White House for their human rights work. The minute that Klatsky was throwing the workers out, he's the CEO of PVH, he gave himself a $700,000 bonus. And I looked into his financial records. You know, these people don't even pay for their kids to go to school. He gets $71,000 a year grant from the company to send his little kiddies to college. He makes $2.6 million a year. You think he could afford it. And they don't even pay co-payments for health. It's unbelievable what these people do. He took another $30,000 or $40,000 in co-payments for his whole family for their health maintenance. And they throw these workers out because they were making $1.09 an hour. Well, I went into the Sports Authority not that long ago, and I bought this Yankee Blazer jersey in honor of them winning the World Series. And I look inside, and it says, Made in Burma. Now, you know better than I know this tremendous activism. People have done enormously fantastic work here, which is spread all across the country. But you know better than I do that the place is a concentration camp, that the military, you know, really solidified their power in 1988 when they gunned down thousands of people on the street who were marching for the right to vote and for democracy, students, union people. And now the country's run by a vicious military dictatorship that keeps the people in line through terror, rape, torture, ethnic cleansing, murder, you name it. In Burma, you go to prison for 20 years for criticizing the military dictators. You'll go to jail for 15 years for having a fax machine under the science law. And it is a concentration camp. President Clinton did one good thing. He said, let's stop all new U.S. investments in Burma until the military thugs are out. No new U.S. investments. That was May of 1997. Strange thing happened. The U.S. apparel companies in 1998 increased their imports from Burma by 44%. What sanctions? They laughed in his face, and they increased the imports by 44% to $110 million a year. Why were the U.S. companies in Burma? Well, they could pay 6 cents an hour, the lowest wages in the world. $8 a month for a 60-hour work week. And it even gets better, because the military is brought into the factories the first hint of any dissatisfaction on the part of the workers. And the workers know that they'll be taken off to prison and tortured. So you don't have a whole lot of dissent in the factories where the U.S. companies really feel at home there. But it gets worse because the military is not stupid. So they don't allow wholly owned foreign subsidiaries. You have to be in a joint venture with guess who? The military or the drug lords. About 90% of the factories are joint ventures with the military dictators, 10% with the drug lords who run 65% of the heroin to the United States. So the U.S. companies are in bed with the military. The money the military makes off the apparel trade, they made $2 billion off of it since 1988. They go to China, purchase weapons, come back, and murder and torture their own people. And the U.S. companies say to us, you know, why are you always attacking us? Don't you see the good side, the softer side of Sears and the softer side of these companies? Well, I think I'm going to talk about Walmart briefly. Because if we're looking at the global economy, the global sweatshop economy, Walmart's the place to begin. Walmart is the largest retailer in the world. It's the largest retailer in Canada, the largest retailer in the United States. They've entered Germany, they're entering the United Kingdom now. They're becoming the largest retailer in Mexico. Walmart is the largest private sector employer in the United States. Most people don't know about it. General Motors, of course, used to be the largest employer at $46 an hour, $26 in wages, $20 in benefits. General Motors is no longer the largest employer in the United States, but it's the largest employer in Mexico, 50 to 65 cents an hour. And we've got now Walmart as the largest employer. Maybe, you know, about $6.10 an hour average wage. And they cap the work week, they attempt to cap the work week at 25 hours so they don't have to pay benefits. That leaves one half of Walmart's employees eligible for food stamps. So the largest employer in the United States on the verge of the millennium, one half of its employees qualify for food stamps. Besides destroying neighborhoods and all the rest and putting small businesses out and destroying downtown areas, Walmart's also the largest sweatshop abuser in the world. Their annual sales, $137.6 billion. That makes Walmart larger than 155 countries in the world, and there are 192. Walmart's annual sales are larger than the gross domestic product, the entire economic output of 155 countries. What does Walmart do with that power? Well, this is Walmart and the World Trade Organization. Walmart uses that power to play these countries off against each other. You want Walmart work? You can have it, but I won't have any unions, and I won't have any regulations. And no occupational health and safety. And I won't have any red tape. And I won't have any environmental protections. You know that? I won't have anything. And I want low wages, starvation wages. And Walmart plays countries off against each other. Who's going to give them the best deal? They don't pay a single cent of taxes. For example, in the Kathy Lee label with Walmart, this clothing that was made in El Salvador, the entire government revenue in El Salvador is $1.8 billion. The government brings in $1.8 billion in revenues to provide basic needs to over 6 million people. Walmart's annual sales of $137.6 billion means Walmart's revenues are 76 times greater than the entire country of El Salvador, yet Walmart doesn't pay 1 cent of taxes in those free trade zones. Zero. And in El Salvador and these other countries, you don't even have to be in the free trade zones anymore. They've turned the entire countries into sweatshops. So you can set a factory up anywhere, and you don't pay taxes. If you're a multinational, you're going to come in and gouge the low wages. You do it scot-free, no tariffs whatsoever. Walmart, we were going around, and we'd find things like this, these Kathy Lee blouses. And this is sort of epitomizes the race to the bottom. Kathy Lee and Walmart, we always notice a change when we go into the Walmarts. It's as if they chase collapsing currencies and misery. So when we were doing this research, the two big producers were Mexico and Indonesia, both places where the currencies, you know, fell through the floor. Well, anyway, these shirts will hang right next to each other. They're exactly the same. Kathy Lee blouses, $16.96. Close to one small difference. One was made in the United States, $8.42 an hour, $1.70 of labor in this blouse. This blouse was made in Mexico, 50 cents an hour of wages, 17 cents of labor in the blouse. Yet they both cost the exact same thing. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that these jobs are going here very fast. You'd have to be an idiot to stay here and pay, you know, so much more. And in fact, in the last year, in the United States, we've lost 475,000 manufacturing jobs. Well, what kind of a company is Walmart? People remember maybe back in 1992 when NBC, Dateline, went with a nun to Bangladesh and the nun took them through the factory and they had hidden cameras. And they found children 9 years old to 12 years old on three floors in the factory making clothing for Walmart, shirts. The kids were paid 5 to 8 cents an hour and they worked until midnight. And if they made mistakes, the kids told the nun they hit us and they punched us. They took the tapes back to David Glass, the CEO of Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas, and they showed him the tapes. And he looked at the tapes and he said, "These images don't mean a thing to me. You and I define child labor differently." They took the tape back to Bangladesh and they showed it to the factory owner, who had been working under contract with Walmart for over a year. He looks at the tape and he looks up at them and he says, No. He said, "You have it all wrong. You only think that those are children. They're really malnourished adults." So this is the moral fiber of the World Trade Organization and the corporations. You only think they're children, but it's different. They're really malnourished adults. We recently found Walmart in a factory called Beximco in Bangladesh, where they were paying the workers 20 cents an hour. They're supposed to earn 33 cents an hour. They were paying them 20 cents an hour. They were forcing them to work 7 days a week from 7:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night. Overtime is supposed to be double time. So if it was 33 cents, they're supposed to be getting 66 cents an hour. Walmart paid 20 cents an hour and paid overtime and straight time, the same 20 cents. For an 80-hour work week, they pay the workers $16. They're supposed to earn $36. Walmart, the largest, most profitable retail in the world, is stealing $20 a week from some of the poorest people in the world. That's how they make their money. And yet Walmart's operating profit last year was $7.6 billion, and the Walton family is worth $67.5 billion. But they have to cheat the people in Bangladesh of a 33-cent wage or 66-cent wage with overtime. Again, there's enormous greed through the system. About a month ago, a bunch of people were killed in another fire in Bangladesh because they're locked in the factories. There's metal grates on the windows. There's no fire escapes, no fire extinguishers. And the women bashed through the grates. They were up on the third or fourth floor. They tried to tie some of the clothing together and go out, and the rope collapsed. 5 were killed, and 50 were seriously injured, 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds, making clothing for the U.S. companies. Well, I think you know about Saipan. This is a beautiful scheme. This is really what the World Trade Organization would applaud, I think. In Saipan, the American companies figured out, well, look, at this place is U.S. territory. What good is it? Let's figure out what we can use it for. So U.S. territory, but it's not covered by immigration law. It's not covered by minimum wage law, but it's U.S. territory. So the U.S. companies figured out that they could take their partners from China, have them relocate their factories to Saipan, and they could put on the clothing made in the USA. Send it back to the United States, so you'd buy a piece of clothing that said made in the United States, but of course it was made in Saipan in the territory. It was made by workers paid $2.15 below the U.S. minimum wage. It was made by workers locked in factories 12 and 14 hours a day. And how the scheme worked, they sent recruiters to China, where they recruited 15,000 young women a year, bring them to Saipan. They were told they were coming to the United States, they'd get good jobs, high wages, good living conditions. They only had to pay $5,000 as a recruitment fee, which of course they couldn't pay, they'd have to work off. So the women came to Saipan. Little did they know, they're locked in factories and locked in dormitories. When they got there, they charged them $200 a month for room and board. So if you add it up, it's $5,000 recruitment fee, $2,400 a year for room and board. That's $7,400. Well, if the women were making $3 an hour, which they were, and if they're working 45-hour work week, they could not even pay their debt off if they worked every single day for the entire year. In other words, two things are obvious. They weren't working 45 hours a week. They were working 7 days a week, and they're working 12 to 14 hours a day, not 8 hours a day. The second thing that's obvious is that they were indentured servants because it took them the whole period to pay off their debt to the recruiters and to the companies. And it gets even worse in that the workers had to sign what they call the shadow contract. And if they became pregnant, they would be fired and deported. If they fell in love or got married or attempted to get married, they'd be fired and deported. If they wouldn't work the overtime, they'd be fired and deported. If they criticized working and living conditions, they'd be fired and deported. If they wouldn't lie to inspectors that came in, to the factories or to the dorms, they would be fired and deported. It got so disgusting that if they became involved in religious activities, which would drain their energies from work, they would be fired and deported. And of course, they'd be sent back to China in enormous debt that they could never pay off. And of course, they would suffer any kind of retaliation that the recruiters wanted to bring against them because they were working hand in glove with the government. Walmart produces in Saipan in a factory called Mirage. They're in the same factory with the Gap and with J. Crew and the Limited. Well, I want to talk briefly about my friend Kathy Lee Gifford because I can't leave her out of this. A few years ago when she was crying on television and threatening to sue me, if you remember, she was shedding these crocodile tears and she was waving a letter I had written to her. And she was saying, "Mister, sit by your telephone. You're going to get a call from my attorney. You can say I'm ugly. You can say I can't sing. You can say I can't act. All of it true. But don't dare say that I don't love little kitties. And Mister, sit by your telephone." So I can explain the background. We were in Honduras, and young women approached us, and they said, "Would you meet with us? We have a lot of problems at our factory." And we do the same thing like we always do. We meet in a clandestine place, a safe house. In this case, it was a food stand about 100 yards away from the factory. The owner is a supporter of human rights. He's always let us meet there. We're safe. So he said that to the woman. "Go on down to the food stand. There's a big fence. We'll meet behind the fence." The meeting's about to start during lunch break. Just as we're going to start the meeting, three young guys walk in. And the women point to the three guys and they say, "These guys are spies. And every single thing we say will go right back to the boss. We can't meet." And it was a very tense confrontation with these guys. Well, what the women did, they started to file out and they started putting their hands underneath an old table I was standing next to. And I realized they're trying to give me something. So I put my hand under the table, and sure enough, they were putting into my palm their pay stubs. So we would know how much they got paid, who they were, and the labels that they made in the factory. So we would know their names, the pay, the labels. And when they walked out, and I took my hand out from underneath, this was the label I had, Kathy Lee Gifford. These were the pants they made. They were paid 25 cents for every $19.96 pair of Kathy Lee pants they made for Walmart and for Kathy Lee. I just happened to have a blow-up of Kathy Lee Gifford. She doesn't appreciate this. I don't know why, but this has upset Frank, too. We'll come back to him. Well, she's happy, and she's got a lot of teeth. And the bottom of it says, "A portion of the proceeds from the sale of this garment will be donated to various children's charities." It's very touching. Before anybody weeps, these are the workers. They leave out the tiny fact that it was children that were making the clothing. So Kathy Lee Gifford's pants was being made in Honduras by 13, 14, and 15-year-olds. And somehow they're telling us, if we buy these pants, we're going to be helping little kitties in the United States, but you cannot do it on the backs of children in Honduras who are paid 31 cents an hour and treated like slaves. When we put that out, and Kathy Lee was crying and threatening to sue and everything, we found out that she did have a foundation, but it wasn't quite Paul Newman-type foundation, that in fact she did contribute money. She made $9 million a year off of selling her name to Walmart, and 10% went to the kitties and 90% to Kathy Lee. 90% to Kathy Lee, 10% to the kitties. When they found out that we knew, we never heard again about a lawsuit. But Primetime Live came in, they wanted to do a cover-up, a puff piece on Kathy Lee, same network, and they said to me, "Kathy Lee says, why should we believe you that children work in the factory?" So I gave them a smaller version of this picture. And I got a call back two or three hours later, an hour and a half later, and they said, "Kathy Lee looked at the picture and threw it aside and said, these people could be anybody, they're nobodies." Well, they didn't know we were setting them up, because at that very moment, this young girl was on a plane to the United States when Kathy Lee was going with the mouth that they're nobodies. Wendy Diaz was on a plane coming to the United States, and she was 13 years old when she started to work in the factory. She worked the 12-hour shifts making the Kathy Lee pants. She was 15 years old when she came to the United States. She had a third grade education. She had never traveled before. We had to fight for her visa, fight for her passport. She's on a plane coming to the United States, and the human rights group calls me Cody, and they say she's on the plane. She's being accompanied by Esperanza Reyes, who's, in my opinion, like a real hero, a tremendous women's rights leader with CODE, the Committee for the Defense of Human Rights. And everything's all set, they say. And they say to me, by the way, this kid doesn't talk. And I got really upset over the phone. I said, what do you mean she doesn't talk? Why are you sending someone who doesn't talk? She's going to be interviewed by the New York Times. She's going to be on the radio and television. She's going to testify in Congress. Why are you sending someone who doesn't talk? Well, they said, I don't know. We couldn't get her to talk. When she came to the United States, the only reason she hadn't spoken was no one had taken her seriously before. No one had asked her opinion. No one had spoken with her seriously, listened to her. No one was interested in her opinion. When she came to the United States, she was so full of courage and so full of dignity that it took her 2 weeks to demolish Kathy Lee Gifford and Walmart, to the point I felt sorry for Walmart and I was going to pull little Wendy off of them. She was cleaning them. I mean, we did congressional hearings. I never talk about this, but when Rice spoke, I was thinking about it. We were doing congressional hearings in front of like Rayburn or Cannon, I forget which building. And we got there, Wendy, myself, Esperanza Reyes, and Barbara Biggs from my office. And we were real nervous because we had heard that the Republicans were going to try to get us. These were official hearings held by the Republicans. And a woman named Death Squad Debbie was in charge of pulling together the hearings. She used to work for Helms, and she got the nickname Death Squad Debbie because she was a major player with the Contras, raising money for the Contras. She left the United States, and she married a right-wing general in Honduras. But this case was so big, they brought Death Squad Debbie back from Honduras so she could work all her congressional contacts in the Congress. So we knew we were walking into a fierce fight, and we were afraid to go in. So we stayed outside and tried to just talk to each other. And we're standing. It's a very gloomy day. And we're standing there, and all of a sudden, the sky opens up a little bit, and a ray of light comes right through and hits Wendy. And we're all standing there like that. And our eyes, we're like shocked. Well, we go into the place, and she just wiped them out, completely demolished. All of the pinstripe suits were there from Honduras. They had business people, members of the government. She cleaned the ground with them to the point where Republicans were saying back to these business people from Honduras that little Wendy is doing more to protect jobs and dignity in Honduras than all you people put together. Come back and see us when you're serious. And these people were like really nervous after those hearings. But that's the impact this kid had. It was extraordinary. Well, I'm in a cab in New York City, coming back from a meeting, and I hear beep, 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 beep. Kathy Lee Gifford's going to meet with Wendy Diaz in the National Labor Committee. So I knew we were meeting. I heard about it on the radio. So I go back to my office, and sure enough, I get a call. Now, at this particular moment, they had taken duct tape and put it around Kathy Lee's mouth because she wasn't doing so good, and they hired Howard Rubenstein, the biggest PR firm in New York. They run entire governments. So I get a call from the PR firm, and they say, will you meet? And I say, of course we'll meet. Very anxious to meet. And the guy says, well, where do you want to meet? And I said, a church. And he screams over the thing, what the hell do you want to meet in a church for? And I wasn't going to explain this to him, but we have a big name, the National Labor Committee, but we have a staff of 4 people. So we never let anybody into our office because it's all smoke and mirrors. And so what we do is we meet in churches and find out the companies feel very nervous in church. And I met with Walmart in a progressive church in Greenwich Village, and I noticed they're always looking over their shoulders, and they get very nervous, and it makes them think that we have some very powerful friends on our side, and they don't like it. So we continue to do this. But this was my mistake, because I found out that Kathy Lee was good friends with Cardinal O'Connor. So we met in a church, but it was St. Patrick's Cathedral, and it wasn't the small activist churches I was thinking of. So the day of the meeting comes around, and we were meeting like on a Wednesday morning, and sure enough, we get to the meeting, and sure enough, we're terrified again. We never met Kathy Lee Gifford. We didn't know what she looked like in real life. And we didn't know what to expect. So we hid across the street, like we always do. So we're on 51st Street, and we're looking at the Cardinal's residency, and Wendy's much smaller than I am. We're looking around the corner of the building. She's looking around, I'm looking around. Sure enough, Kathy Lee comes, and they don't go anywhere alone, these rich people. A whole entourage comes. Public relations people, lawyers, company people. And since she cries a lot, someone carries Kleenexes. Well, they go into the meeting, and we build up our courage, and we go in. And my first remark was, my first feelings was, you know, how nice the Cardinal lived. It was a tremendous apartment. And the furniture was big, and they put me right next to Kathy Lee Gifford, who was on a couch, and I'm on a rocking chair. And I was nervous to begin with, but I once I got in the rocking chair, I couldn't stop it from rocking. My feet were barely touching the ground. I'm rocking back and forth, and I'm staring at Kathy Lee Gifford. I can't take my eyes off her. I'm rocking back and forth, looking at her. And I look around the room, and other people are staring at her, and Wendy is staring at her. Wendy was like, her eyes are bulging, and she's staring at Kathy Lee. And I asked her afterwards, "What were you looking at?" And what it turned out is Kathy Lee had come right from her set, her TV program. And if you're not used to seeing these people, they wear so much makeup that it's startling. I mean, it's about like a half an inch thick. You can't see a line or an expression. And she looked like she was embalmed. And it was scary to me. Wendy had never seen anything like it in her life, and she was going to get up and bolt and run out of there. I mean, it was like pretty frightening stuff. But eventually, we got control of the rocking chair, and the meeting starts. And Kathy Lee says to Wendy, "Wendy, tell me about your life." You know, she's really interested in. We had heard one of the things that they were thinking of doing, Kathy Lee and Frank, was to buy Wendy and adopt her. Because if you buy her, you can shut her up. So we crushed that in 2 seconds. But so the meeting starts, and they say, "Oh, Wendy, tell me about your life." And I'm sitting there praying to myself, "Wendy, don't fall for it. Don't start talking, oh, Kathy Lee, you're so beautiful, and New York is so spectacular, and Honduras is so poor, and we've got dirt roads." Wendy didn't fall for it. She looked right back at Kathy Lee Gifford, and without bat an eyelash, in rapid succession, she told Kathy Lee what it was like to live in one room with 11 people. She told Kathy Lee what it was like to earn 31 cents an hour and frequently go to bed hungry because you don't have the money to buy enough food with. She told Kathy Lee Gifford what you felt like when they pick up the garments and throw them in your face in the factory because they say you made a mistake or you're not going fast enough, and they curse at you and call you a chicken head.